From KCRW in Santa Monica, this is DNA. I'm Frances Anderton. Later in the show, Japanese design celebrated at Dwell on Design and in Little Tokyo Design Week. But first, high design takes root in Santa Monica. 2 weeks ago, landscape architect James Corner attended the splashy opening of Phase 2 of the High Line. That's the disused elevated rail line that he and his firm, Field Operations, helped convert into the now famous Park in the Sky on the Lower West Side of Manhattan. Last week, he was in Santa Monica, before the City Council, presenting his latest design for their new civic park. That's a park that consists of two parts, one called Town Square, on the current front yard of Santa Monica City Hall. The other, called Palisades Garden Walk, is across the street on the site of the old Rand Corporation building. Was it possible he could have delivered anything remotely as exciting as the High Line, especially on a site in a quiet part of Santa Monica without any interesting topography or industrial relics to play with? To find out, we have to start by going back to a Saturday last July when James Corner was presented to an audience of 250 people in a tent on the new park's site.
Thank you very much. It's a great, great pleasure to be here. Our objective today is to get to know you and for you to get to meet us and to look at the site together and see what your dreams and aspirations for this place might be.
Field Operations is known for tackling complex public projects involving extensive public outreach from the start. So too is Santa Monica. And that Saturday, to the beat of a live band, people gathered to fill out questionnaires and tell the designers about their hopes for the park.
Yes, my name is Tim Bowler and I'm a Santa Monica resident. My dream park would include community gardens. That's what I'm here for, I'm a special interest person.
I'm George Nigro. Well, I'd like to see more trees, maybe fruit trees, avocado trees, anything that people can come and maybe pick, citrus, orange, and maybe have a garden, a flower garden.
Hi, I'm Phil Brock. I'm a lifelong resident of Santa Monica and a recreation and parks commissioner. I would like a water feature. I would like this to be a place where people come to Santa Monica and not think of us as a city of shopping centers, but a city with great open space that celebrates the outdoors and celebrates the vistas we have in California.
Also present were city staff, including Barbara Stinchfield, Santa Monica's Director of Community and Cultural Services, who has years of experience managing this kind of community involvement. I asked her about it.
It's a kickoff, and it's more than involving the community. It's letting the community know they're the designers.
Are they really the designers? Will they be really putting pen to paper, or will it be more an exchange of ideas and desires?
I would say it's kind of halfway in between. There'll be different phases of the project, and we get to concept design where there are three alternatives. They'll actually get to do some drawing. Today is getting their ideas, their vision, what their expectations are in a more general sense.
And why is it so important to involve the community in this way?
Well, whatever resonates with the community is a successful open space. And if you build an open space that doesn't meet their needs and is not theirs and they don't feel stewards of, it just doesn't work.
Next, participants were invited to explore the site itself, currently an empty lot with a few trees, including a local favourite, a large bay fig ficus named Morty. They were asked to choose their favourite spot, somewhere they'd imagine themselves sitting or enjoying a view. Alex Webb is a local designer who admires James Corner and wanted to experience how he designed the public outreach process.
The designers have created a really interesting process where they ask you to fill a orange paper bag with sand and then place it at some point on the park. And it's really interesting as the day has gone on, little bags of sand have kind of started accumulating and populating, and you can start to see a distinct pattern, yet almost a patternless pattern of where people are interested in the park and where their favorite sections of the park are.
And where did you put your bag of sand?
I put my bag of sand in the far northwest corner. It's a beautiful spot where you have the highway running underneath you and Ocean Avenue running against you. And it's by the contrast of the dynamic traffic flows, it just seems that much more serene to me. And it seems like there's a great opportunity there.
Diane Sabatini, I ended up putting my orange bag close to Shea Jay. You can see it. It's sitting right there all by itself.
And do you like the fact that you've been asked to choose a favorite spot?
Yes. I love this. I'm really enjoying it. I'm enjoying it more than I thought I would.
Because?
Because I get to participate in the process and meet the designers and see illustrations and hear about what they're thinking. It makes me feel like I have a greater vested interest in it.
Matilda.
And do you live in Santa Monica?
Yes.
Did you put an orange bag of sand somewhere on this site?
Yes. I put it up where those palm trees are, those tall ones.
The intriguing thing here was how much would the disposition of orange bags and public questionnaires really inform the design? Was this workshop a gimmicky public relations program designed to win over the client, the public? Or, worse, was there a risk of ending up with a bland design by committee? Here's James Corner.
Well, you're right. I mean, the tendency is for these sorts of civic public spaces to become, you know, a bit of a hodgepodge of multiple representation. And so everybody gets their little piece. And what's unfortunate is when you look at the parks over the past 50 or 70 years that have been designed and made in that way, they tend to now be empty because the little token space that was allocated to one particular group doesn't stand the test of time. That group moves on and those particular individuals move on. So it is important to try through design to create a landscape that multiple people can relate to, multiple agendas get dealt with, but to do it in a way that avoids this sort of parcelization and simple allocation of token spaces to token uses. It should be a much more transcendental phenomena than that. I mean, one of the successes of the High Line is it was never, ever really conceived in terms of allocating uses and satisfying different interest groups. It was conceived of as something that transcended all of that. And as such, everybody feels welcome and everybody relates to it in different ways. So I think a project like this has to be thought of in design terms as an idea that transcends local interests and at the same time accommodates everybody.
Fast forward to last week, and after several months of workshops with the public and meetings with Santa Monica's multiple citizen groups, James Corner presented a final design that did not include community gardens or fruit trees, but it did embody a transcendental idea, the romantic notion of Santa Monica as an arroyo, and an appeal to what Corner told the council were the two primary demands of residents.
The importance of views and topography in the park, and the importance of a space for civic engagement and public discourse in Town Square.
The design takes us far from the flattish site that is currently there. It is sculpted into undulating paths and artificial hills, with high points framing the views the public liked best, and it proposes an orgy of diverse trees and flowers and grasses. Stephen Billings is a landscape architect in Santa Monica and he's curator of an exhibit currently on show of new park design. He likes field operations design for its plant diversity and its appeal to cultural memory instead of, say, shopping. And he says,
people love to get up high. You know, maybe that's what he learned from the High Line, you know, that having that vista and having the framed view is something that people really like to have, and it gives them a sense of lifting them up out of their everyday life, you know, above the street.
One person who has tracked the process from the start is Frank Gruber. He is a Santa Monica attorney with a seemingly insatiable appetite for Santa Monica's political and land use squabbles. His observations are gathered in a book called Urban Warrior.
Was there anything about this design process that had worried him?
Well, it's actually going surprisingly well for a couple reasons. One reason was it attracted a wider range of public that came to it. It wasn't just the kind of partisans of one thing or another. It had a general interest to people in Santa Monica and attracted kind of a wide range. And so the kind of strident voices that sometimes derail things didn't have as much, they were diluted, let's put it that way. The other reason was that with the designers came in with a fair amount of prestige, let's put it that way. People were excited about this. It was an evidence that the city was trying to be ambitious about this site. Site's a very crucial site, not just for Santa Monica, but really for the region. It's one of the few places I can see where it makes sense to spend redevelopment money, because it really is a regional resource. It's right by the pier. You know, millions of people come to the beach and that kind of thing. So they brought in James Corner and his people, and they have a vision, and they listen. They're very good listeners, and everybody who says they were listened to believes they really were listened to, which seems to be the case, that the park does reflect the location and what they got from the Santa Monica residents.
Now, there was one moment where it looked like the project might be slightly derailed. Just tell us about that.
Well, it's not the whole project. It's just what's called the town square, which is, if you know Santa Monica, we have this kind of cool art deco or streamlined modern, whatever you want to call it, city hall. And in front of it is a kind of lawn and some concrete pathways and a rose garden that was there for as a memorial. And the design people, and they went through the process, developed a design for it, nothing that I thought was very radical, whatever. But in the course of which, they would take it to different boards and commissions, and they started taking it to the Landmarks Commission. And as the process went along, the Landmarks Commission started to get more nervous about things about it. And after a couple months, they came up with a list of a long list, close to 20 items that they felt was character defining. Then in May, the Landmarks Commission met and declared a whole bunch of these, including things like the color of the concrete in the sidewalks and this kind of stuff, and the overall symmetry, and a lot of other stuff within their purview as part of this character-defining thing. And in effect, what this did was it meant that the Landmarks Commission was taking over control of the design process for this town square part. And basically, a counterattack got started. So there was kind of a showdown coming up last week at City Hall.
The showdown was between preservationists wanting to limit change in front of City Hall and those in favour of having James Corner and his team design a far bolder town square on that site. It took place after midnight when determined activists on both sides stood up to make their case to the City Council. Here's Nina Fresco of the Landmarks Commission, Cosmo Buer, and Louise Steiner.
The landscape in front of the 1939 City Hall is a designed landscape inspired by the City Beautiful movement. City Beautiful landscapes were orderly, dignified, and harmonious. The emphasis was on views and symmetrical alignments. City Hall's historic landscape has remained remarkably intact over the decades.
I'm not in favor of the town square design as it stands. I'm very much opposed to ripping out the juniper trees now living in front of City Hall. They've been there for so long that they've become a part of the landmark for many of us. Personally, I believe they're more beautiful and more meaningful than the building is.
This evening, as I was walking towards City Hall, the harmonious beauty of City Hall and the surrounding landscape literally took my breath away. For 32 years, I have loved this spot, and I am loving it more every minute, considering that it might be gone, changed forever.
Then came a plea for design freedom. First, Richard McKinnon of the Rec and Parks Commission, then Janice Schnittman and Grace Phillips.
From the moment this was conceived, this link between the front of Town Hall and the pier and Palisades Park caught the imagination of everyone in Santa Monica. And then we hired what we thought was the top landscape designer in the world to give it that touch of magic that would make it stand out. Now, when you look at it today, you see two sides that are quite different. One has that element of magic, and on the other side, you see a design that looks as if it's handcuffed.
And the magic came out of a wonderful public process that engaged a huge swath of the community with many different interests, except it got compromised at the end where our future Ken Genzer Civic Plaza had shackles placed on it, and they were shackles of an overly heavy-handed and injudiciously and not well-discerning notion of preservation that just wasn't preserving something that worth preserving.
Last night, I went to the James Corner presentation, and I have to say I was a fan of his before, and now, as I said to his staff member earlier, I would actually lick his shoes. I was amazed at how he could take what the community asked him and turn it into something really artful and very responsive and very unique to Santa Monica. I am not thrilled, however, about the latest development at Town Square. I think the design has been weakened and compromised by a misguided attempt to stop time.
And then came a moment when James Corner got to demonstrate just how much a designer also has to be a politician, especially when operating in the public realm. Back to Frank Gruber.
Corner was very funny about it because he came in and they said, well, what do you think about your plan now that it's been revised? And he said,
you know, it's a good, competent, open, relatively flexible, responsible, responsive design. But it's not great. It's not fresh. It's maybe too open. It's not so well linked to the park on the other side. You know, it's maybe not as progressive as, you know, another group in Santa Monica would aspire to be. So any advice you have would be welcome.
And so the city council kind of emphatically said last week that they want the designers to forget, not forget the purposes of the lawn in front of the the landmark City Hall, not forget that, but don't worry about the details and be bold, as they said.
You used the word competent. We didn't go through this to get a competent design. We went through this to get a spectacular design. So I would hope that we would find a way to honor the building and honor its history and honor the history of the site while looking forward as well. I don't think we have to be so honoring of the past that we sort of seal ourselves in saran wrap and say this is the way it's going to be forever.
So I would encourage you, with sensitivity, to do something like Gaudi. Not go outside the box, but go, you know, make the whole thing look like it's melting, you know. But go beyond the outside of the box and really try to take people's breath away.
That was Santa Monica City Council members Gleam Davis and Bob Holbrook. By the end of the meeting, the entire city council had agreed. James Corner and field operations had the go-ahead. Be bold.
Private lawns, public parks. They've got private lawns, public parks.
You can see field operations designed for Palisades Garden Walk and Town Square on show along with five other important new park designs in Southern California at an exhibit at WUHO at 6518 Hollywood Boulevard. I recorded these interviews as part of a documentary for the City of Santa Monica that is tracking the creation of the park. Thanks very much to City TV for the audio from the City Council meeting. You're listening to DNA. I'm Frances Anderton. And now Japan. For several months, Michael Sylvester had been planning an exhibit on Japanese design as part of the Dwell on Design show that he managing directs and that starts this Friday. Meanwhile, Hitoshi Abe, architect and chair at UCLA, was busy preparing next month's first Little Tokyo Design Week. There, he planned to showcase contemporary Japanese design. Then, on March 11, the earthquake and tsunami hit. At first, both considered cancelling their exhibits, but each determined that it was essential to move ahead and help support the Japanese people's recovery by showcasing the innovation that is central to their economy. In a moment, we'll hear from Hitoshi Abe. First, here's Michael Sylvester to tell us about the two exhibits at Dwell on Design, the first one meaning Freshly Baked.
One of those is an exhibit of emerging Japanese designers, which is called Yakitate. And this exhibit is not just product on display from these independent designers, but the designers themselves will be at the show giving demonstrations, presentations, interviews, and so forth, which is great. There are 8 designers. I won't read off all their names in Japanese for you, but they range from the designer Takeshi Miyakawa, who's done some fantastic furniture design, through to Yunko Shiba, who is a product designer who's done some incredible small-scale work. So it's, again, these designers, some of them do lighting, some of them do bags and furniture. We even have a claymation group there who make these amazing clay models for Japanese animation.
That visitors to DOD can witness, because the designers will do that in situ.
Yes. We also have Sasaki, who is a performance artist who draws live heartbeats of attendees at the show. Sasaki is an artist who's just returned from performing at the Biennale in Venice, where he was invited. So he will be performing at Dwell on Design. But it's important to note that this is a fundraising activity to support disaster relief in Japan. And so Sasaki will be painting the heartbeats of donors at Dwell on Design who pay a small fee, and Sasaki listens to the heartbeat of that person and adds it to the large-scale canvas that he's working on. So it's a visual portrayal of empathy, if you could put it that way, as well as being a monetary donation and a performance that you can watch at the show, which is an interesting combination of charity and performance art.
Dwell on Design opens this Friday with a long weekend of products, exhibits and panel discussions. I'll be hosting one this Friday afternoon, and DNA listeners can get a discount pass. Find out more on our website. Also on right now, surrounding Dwell on Design, is the Los Angeles Design Festival. It was co-founded by Michael Sylvester, and that's the umbrella name and brand for design events that are happening all around town to coincide with Dwell on Design. Read more about the Los Angeles Design Festival and submit events for inclusion on our website. And now we turn to Hitoshi Abe, co-curator of Little Tokyo Design Week. I started by asking him, what is it?
Actually, the Little Tokyo Design Week was invented by many of us who really loves Little Tokyo. We love this place so much, but also at the same time, we have a little concern because, you know, the Little Tokyo has such a potential to be a great place and also to be the hub of the different activity in downtown Los Angeles. But also we realize that because its identity is represented by the more traditional Japanese culture, so that it is limiting the audiences. And I know that now during night people comes in to enjoy the food, but what we thought was if we could sort of renew its identity, or if we could bring a much new identity on top of Little Tokyo's existing identity, it could open up to the much broader audiences. And of course, naturally we thought, Japanese design could be the one.
Little Tokyo Design Week brings together talents from Japan and from Los Angeles. It will feature products, discussion and exhibits spread through 3 cultural institutions and 18 containers placed in the streets of Little Tokyo. One of the exhibits is going to be the EDV-01. That's a prototype for an amazing robotic shelter and potential command center for use in disasters that's been created by the Japanese industrial housing company, Daiwa. In fact, Hitoshi Abe, our guest, is from Sendai. That was the nearest major city to the earthquake. I asked him if he has been back to Japan since.
I went back to Japan month after tsunami. Also, I just came back from Japan maybe 2 weeks ago. And I don't want to kind of exaggerate it, but to me it was shocking to see how different it is from the landscape I know. And that's the area I've grown up with. I have an office, I have parents, and that's the actually, you know, the place I'm still sort of active. And
in Sendai?
Yeah. And the university I used to teach is totally red-tagged because the earthquake just sliced the building into half. And there are many students doesn't have a place to study. And I think maybe they just started to relocate them to the temporary building to study. And also, there are many people who are still living in a shelter. So I would like to say they are on the way to recover, but you know, it will take a really long time. to go back to so-called normal, or maybe it will never go back to the normal.
And were your own family okay?
Yes, my parents are okay, my brothers is okay, but for the first 2 days, I was totally freaking out because I just couldn't reach them. All the communication was down about a week. So I would say my closest family is okay, but beyond that, there's a many, many sad story everybody is sharing at the moment.
You're an architect known for doing absolutely exquisite buildings, some of them buildings for leisure, you know, like restaurants or cultural centres. Something like an earthquake comes along and brings one up short, you know, in terms of the fragility of existence and even the fragility of structure. Does it change your thinking about the role of buildings or your role as an architect?
In a way, we learned that the overwhelming power of nature, and also nice to respect that kind of power of nature and sort of be prepared for that. What we also found out is there are so many signs left by ancient people saying, don't build below this area. There's a stone with a message from a long time ago saying, don't ever build any building or the house below this stone.
This is in Sendai you're talking about?
No, this is in, actually, I forgot where, but it's in eastern Japan. And luckily, that village followed this message, so they were not damaged. Also, the area I'm from, actually, it's near my office. There's a shrine called Namiwake Shrine. Namiwake means, Nami means wave, Wake means division. So it was also built as a marker to tell how far the wave came in the past. But because the technologies are advanced and because we started to actually build like a dikes and so on, and we thought we were well prepared, but then obviously it was not prepared to against like the tsunami of the millennium. So what we learned again is that maybe it is very important to respect nature and also to be very sort of straightforward to accept the limitation so that it maybe helps us to make more sustainable and also efficient environment, rather than trying to control nature.
That was Hitoshi Abe, architect and chair of the Department of Architecture and Urban Design at UCLA. Little Tokyo Design Week opens to the public on July 14, and you can find out more about it on our website. That's it for today's show. It was produced by Ray Guana with production assistance from Melissa Walker. The consulting producer is Jennifer Farrow. Thanks to Nan Sherry Lieberman for managing the website. To comment about today's show, go to kcrw.com/DNA, where you can also stream and podcast the show and check out past episodes. And you can always subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. I'm Frances Anderton. Thank you very much for listening, and join me again next month for more DNA.